This episode of Find a Way is brought to you by Crooked Path Forge, Gainesville's home for custom-made handcrafted blades by blacksmith Jordan Borstelman. Go to crookedpathforge.org right now and you can use Find a Way's special promo code FINDAHAMMER to get 10% off all products and workshops available on the website. I'm on the website right now. Here are some of the things they've got for sale. They've got a textbook for making your own Viking-era bearded axe, which is pretty badass. They've got a knife for your kitchen, an herb choppa, as it's called on the website, just what you think, for cutting herbs. They've got a Crookshank knife for sale. You could buy yourself a Crooked Path Forge t-shirt, very fashionable. There are tons of blades for sale. There's even... There's even a calendar from the Bearded Brotherhood of Blacksmiths. It's a charity calendar, and it says in big letters, NSFA, not safe for anywhere, which has just got my imagination running all over the place. Who knows what the hell is inside this calendar, but I'm sure it's good. Some of the blades for sale, a forest forager for, you know, going through the forest, cutting mushrooms, things like that. But there's also classic kitchen knives, a sheep's foot chef's knife, a hunter's knife, tons of things. And here's the thing, Jordan's knives usually sell pretty quick. So by the time you check the website, these might already be sold out, but it doesn't matter. There'll be more up there. And on top of that, the knives aren't the only thing for sale. The other thing that you can find on the website, crookedpathforge.org, is the schedule of workshops that are offered. Okay, I'm looking at it right now. In November, there's a knife grinding class you can go to. In December, he's got camp knife classes. There are single day workshops where you go in and walk out with a blade that you have crafted yourself in hand. There are multiple day knife workshops. There are hatchet workshops. There are hammer forging workshops. The classes are endless. I highly recommend you try them. I've been to two and loved every minute. It was really enjoyable. Go to crookedpathforge.org, use promo code FINDAHAMMER, and get yourself 10% off a holiday gift, a birthday gift, or maybe just a gift to yourself or to a friend. It's a wonderful way to spend the day, and it's a wonderful product to buy for someone you love, including yourself. Thanks so much. I hope you enjoy the show. This is a travelogue, a chronicle of life's journeys and the bits of wisdom gathered along the path. This is a sketch, a perpetually unfinished portrait of a community of explorers. This is a guide to curiosity and wonder, setting off from Gainesville, Florida. This is Find a Way. Our guest this week is singer-songwriter, producer, visual artist, designer, photographer, cycling and outdoors enthusiast, Jacob Adams. Impressive as it may be, it's not the long list of talents that compels me to pursue a closer friendship with this Renaissance man. It's what lies at the source, a heart with a passion for communication and a desire to learn and grow from its pain. Today, we discuss the power of that pain and how we redirect it into music and art in order to continuously transform ourselves into stronger, more compassionate beings. Stay tuned for selections from Hurts, the new EP release from Jacob's current musical project, Them. Thanks for finding your way here today. Enjoy.
It has begun.
Wow.
All right.
Everything's happening.
How you doing?
Doing well.
Yeah?
Yeah. Had a nice therapy session this morning already.
Do you do it online or is it in person?
In person.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a person. Her name is Vicky Knox. She's really great. I've been seeing her for like 3 years now.
Yeah.
Something like that. And yeah, she's local, is right in the Duck Pond.
Nice.
I can just, most of the time I walk there and it's just like, it's really like, it's a nice walk. It's a nice space. It's in one of the big old houses on the edge of the Thomas Center.
Yeah.
Yeah, just makes it like really pleasant. And
yeah, it sounds like all aspects are therapeutic.
Yeah.
The walk.
Yeah. Yeah.
The therapy. The walk back.
Yeah.
The atmosphere. The walk.
Yeah. It's great. And like very affordable. She's just like easy to talk to. Very thoughtful.
Is there a certain And if I'm asking too much, you just let me know. But is there a kind of therapy, like a brand that you're doing, or?
It's like pretty, I think, basic talk therapy.
Yeah.
For me, it's been really nice just to have someone to talk to.
Yeah.
And not that I don't have anyone in my life to talk to, but, you know, there's a difference in like what you bring to your conversations with a therapist and what you might bring to, like, you know, my wife, Shannon, or any of the friends in my life who are, you know, all people who I feel comfortable talking to. But
yeah, just knowing that it's like a safe space where you're not burdening anybody with anything. You're not feeding anybody's fear. To be able to speak with a therapist who has spoken to so many people with so many different problems, I at least get the sense that, you know, I'm not getting judgment. You know, I'm not getting...
Yeah, there's no risk of changing the dynamic of your, like, relationship with that person.
Right. It's a nice, I want to say playground, but it's not really play. And I mean, sometimes it's play, but it's like a safe place to try yourself.
It's an emotional sandbox.
Exactly right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Choosing to do therapy, I've been doing it now. I'd never done it before. Mm-hmm. And then my previous partner, Jess, who is also a therapist, and my friend Travis both encouraged me in the right way to go. You know, it's kind of hard to encourage somebody to go to therapy without mm-hmm. it being personal. And I did take it personally at first. I was like, what do you mean? I'm fine. And I wasn't. but yeah, I can still picture the moment sitting with Travis in his living room. And, you know, he was a person that I went to a lot to sort of get out my frustrations and get out my fears and anxieties. And I remember him just very gently being like, you know, you should really try therapy. It would be really good for you. And that it hit me right that time. And that kind of, I can remember that opening the door in my mind. Like it made it all of a sudden I thought like, yeah, maybe I should, but I didn't really take that next step. And then my partner, Jess, we were struggling and I knew that it wasn't her fault. And I wasn't sure if it was my fault or if it was anybody's fault. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of what, you know, her support and that situation sort of pushed me to finally do it. And if somebody sat me down today and said, like, you have to choose one decision you made in your life that benefited you the most, that is it. Mm-hmm. Number one decision, starting therapy, without a doubt. Not even a second thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I totally relate to that feeling. You know, I had also never really done therapy in my life, and Shannon and I's relationship was like kind of like an inflection point. Mm-hmm. And I had never been averse to going to therapy. I had a positive mindset towards it. I just never really thought about it as something that was like acutely something I needed.
Yeah.
And it became that, and it, you know, it's been a massive benefit to my own personal life, to my own emotional life. I think it's been a big benefit to Shannon and I's relationship.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is something where I feel really good about the decision to go and to continue going.
Yeah.
You know, even where I'm at a point in my life now where I feel pretty stable mm-hmm. and like emotionally stable. And I've, you know, the last 2 or 3 years, I've worked through a lot of my stuff with my therapist, but the like regular check-in is just, it's nice to have it on my calendar. It's something that keeps my mental health at the forefront of my thought throughout the month. You know, I meet once a month at this point.
Yes.
And yeah, it keeps that awareness for me, and it's been really valuable.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the act, just sort of like the same thing with playing an instrument mm-hmm. or writing songs or any creative endeavor, my brain always goes to creative stuff, but any dedication that you have to a thing, to an act or a skill or something like that, I feel as though it sends a message to your self, to your psyche, to your subconscious, whatever it is, that this is important. I'm making this a priority. I'm doing this every week. I would like to make this top priority, which mental health, I feel as though should be everybody's top priority. I struggle with people, or I struggle with the concept, and therefore people who tout the concept of putting other people first, you know, I put my children first, it's my children before me, and, or, you know, my friends before me, or whatever it is, which is a really beautiful intent. And mm-hmm. I don't mean to shoot it down, but if your own mental health isn't before all those things, you can't do those things. I shouldn't say you, if my mental health isn't the priority, I can't do those other things. And I would be surprised if anybody could, if anybody's really doing a good job of it, because those people that you care about, I assume, care about you back. And seeing somebody put other people first all the time and therefore suffering from it is torture. It's horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, you know, it's the oxygen mask on the plane. Right.
That's like, right.
Yes. Put yours on first and then help other people. And, you know, you don't, if there's people who you really care about and who you want to be in service to, you don't do them any service by not being at your fullest capacity to help them if it's something that's important to you.
Right.
And I think that, you know, getting your mental health in line is like that gift to the people in your life.
Yeah. Not to mention, you know, from a teacher point of view, one of the most important lessons I ever learned was that regardless, you know, all the strategies that teachers try to use to get kids to learn things and all the strategies that parents try to use to teach their kids things, the number one most effective one is modeling. Just you do it. Mm-hmm. Show them how to do it, mm-hmm. you know? And that applies to anybody. It doesn't have to be your student or your kid.
Just oh, yeah.
Friends in general. I learn from my friends all the time. I feel like you and I have only come together to a closer friendship recently, and like I've already learned like a ton from you. It's that's kind of the beauty of our community that we have, is you know, so many of us have so much to give if you'll just let us. Mm. You know.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally.
Why do you think people, you mentioned that you had a positive outlook on therapy from the start, and I did too. I think maybe my sin was, I think it's great for other people. I just don't think I need it, right? Mm-hmm. Or that kind of thing. And my ultimate hesitation was that I didn't think it was worth spending the money. Like it felt like a luxury, you know, mm-hmm. And trying to figure out a way to find that extra chunk of money every month seemed impossible.
Yeah.
But why do you think it's so hard for so many people to let themselves do it?
I think that a lot of people feel that it's an acknowledgement of a fault, mm-hmm. right? That there's something wrong with me and I have to have this thing to fix it. And I think that that is something that causes people to, you know, put it off or second guess it or not feel like engaging in it is something that indicates an acceptance of imperfection.
Yeah.
And, you know, from a mental health standpoint, in most people's lives, acceptance of their own imperfection is probably really valuable. But it's a tough step because we don't live in a society that really like embraces people who are seen as imperfect.
Right.
In a lot, you know, in a lot of ways, a lot of aspects. And so I think that there's that side. And then I think that there are people who probably feel that engaging in therapy is going to reveal some darkness in them or give that darkness permission to come forward.
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
That is scary. I remember feeling some hesitation about that too.
Yeah.
Just wondering like, what am I going to dig up? Is there some memory buried in there that I've forgotten that I don't want to remember? Or
some, you know, some truth that maybe you like deep down know and are ignoring.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're going to have to like face it. Mm-hmm. And I think there's like fear of what it looks like to do that.
Yeah.
You know, when I first started therapy, that's kind of the feeling that I had in my, any, you know, trepidation I had, even with a positive outlook on therapy, I definitely felt like, you know, am I going to convince myself that I don't want to be with Shannon?
Sure.
You know, if I talk it all out and I talk about all the issues that we have in our relationship, which, you know, is an ongoing long-term relationship that I love being in, and I love Shannon, and I love, you know, everything that we've struggled through and all of like the great moments we've had.
Yeah.
But it's not perfect.
Yeah.
And so, you know, do you, am I going to talk myself into demanding perfection or, you know, saying like, this isn't right for me and I have to take this bold action, as opposed to I want this to improve and I'm going to commit to staying in it and working on it.
Wow.
And I think that that ultimately like is where I landed in therapy, is not I have to cut this bad thing out of my life, because it wasn't that, but instead I am gaining a deeper commitment to making the things in my life that I care about work and be a positive thing in my life.
Wow. You nailed it, man. Or at least for me. That's especially the, I so connect with you on the fear of the big action, you know, the fear of like, am I going to figure out that I have to do something that I don't want to do?
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, I have such a, I have such admiration, and I feel so closely connected to my therapist, Caroline, that I know that I would be accountable to her as well. Like, okay, we discovered this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Have you done it yet?
Yeah.
You know, like, and I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. I don't wanna do it, you know, or, and also that you touched upon something that is close to my heart in my own experience in therapy, which is over time I've come to understand this part of myself that has the impulse to drop a thing when it's not perfect. And in some ways I used to admire this part of myself for being brave. You know, I would, if I knew a relationship wasn't working, I would end it, and I wouldn't let it stretch out into, you know, whatever. I would just do it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And each long-term relationship I've had in my life just went a little bit longer, a little bit longer, a little bit longer. But there would always come this point where I would think, I don't know, I think this is it, you know, yeah. and I'd cut. And this realization I had recently, in the last couple of years, was just recognizing that this part of myself kind of has it's a somewhat childish yet highly effective solution for problems, mm-hmm. which is like, well, if you just drop it, if you just get rid of it, it's not a problem anymore, and then you can just move on to another thing, and this works every time, you
yeah.
know,
you're, oh,
the
yeah.
problem goes away, there mm-hmm. you go, just do it, no problem. And realizing that, like, okay, you're right, technically it is a version of a solution, mm-hmm. however, when I look back at those relationships that ended, those people deserved the work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those people deserved my effort and deserved my belief. They were really good people. They still are really good people that I was with, that I love very much to this day. And that's been my experience with Audrey, is we keep on doing the work. We keep on grinding away. Is that the word? Chipping away, whatever. We keep on working at it.
Mm-hmm.
And that has turned out to be one of my favorite things about our relationship, is how many times we've dirtied ourselves and gotten back up and continued.
Mm-hmm.
Such an important lesson.
Yeah. And I feel, you know, I feel like in like the social media world,
mm-hmm.
there's this almost like pop psychiatry approach that says the same thing that you say to yourself and you just mentioned, is, you know, cut the bad things out of your life immediately.
Right.
Don't wait. do it now. And I think that if you are not in a position to accurately evaluate, which, you know, if your mental health is not in order, you can make those decisions really fast and without really giving it, you know, proper context, a proper level of insight and thought. And that's why, you know, it's so important to be able to talk about it with somebody else, because then you get that outside perspective and it's not just you seeing the meme that says, you know, do it now, never look back. I just, that's like the general vibe. I'm not thinking of a specific one, but I feel like I see it all the time.
Yeah.
And it tugs at the emotions and it tugs at the heartstrings when you see it. It does for me. And I think, am I doing a disservice to myself by not, like, you know, immediately dropping all these things? Am I staying in a situation that's unhealthy for me for some, you know, reason? And being in therapy, being able to talk it all out with someone who is impartial but also invested in my well-being has been a tool that allows me to make a informed decision about these things in my life.
Yeah.
And more often than not, I realize, you know, the same sentiment that you just shared, it's worth the investment in the people in my life that I care about.
Yeah. It's funny. Therapy in a way helped me feel safer with my decisions. It has reinforced my belief that I can get through tough things. I can get through even the concept of making the wrong decision has sort of shifted in my understanding now. You know, I understand that there are decisions that play out better than others, but I have a renewed sense of faith in the idea that whatever decision I make, there's a path to get through it, you know? And so when I look back at, my first long-term relationship, serious long-term relationship with my partner, Meg, she was this incredible person who opened me up to so many things and, you know, changed me profoundly in ways that I loved. And yet I was unhappy. When I look back for a long time, I looked back and I thought, man, I shouldn't have ended that. I was definitely the problem. I was the, you know, and I was blaming her for my problems and, you know, and I can look back and kick myself for so many like stupid decisions and, you know, just ignorant, naive thoughts. And then I think like, okay, you know, it taught me a ton. I certainly was aware of those mistakes in my next relationship. And then I look at her life too, and I think, man, how nice that she didn't have to go through me figuring all that shit out over who knows how long, a decade or something.
Yeah.
She's married and has kids and has this beautiful home and seemingly beautiful life. And I'm happy too. You know, it's like one of my biggest mistakes turned out to be, I'm very happy and I'm, you know, and I think she is too. That aspect, okay, that makes me feel better. And yet it hasn't made me care about my decisions less. It's made me recognize like, yeah, I could just drop everything as soon as it gets bad and still find a way to be happy. But there's a profound happiness that I get from a thing that I worked on a bunch and put effort into. And
yeah, I think it's one of those situations where the word happy is thrown around and it means many different things in many different contexts. And, you know, what you just described, the first thing that jumps in my mind is like the happiness trap, where if I'm like feeling, and we're, you know, we're socialized our whole lives and exposed to all the, you know, commercial media that we're exposed to, is like we're supposed to be happy. If we're not happy all the time, something is wrong,
right?
And then you immediately start to try to fix it, and capitalism sells us the fix. And so, you know, that gut feeling that has been instilled in us since the time we were able to absorb any sort of media is something that guides a lot of our decisions and is designed to. And when we start to apply that to our emotional selves and our like personal lives and our relationships, then it gets to be, you know, you feel that urgency, which has been programmed into you from birth to fix the unhappiness. And I think that part of, you know, therapy for me and part of my own journey through adulthood and hard times and sadness and grief is learning that it's unrealistic to expect to be happy all the time. Mm. It's a thing that's sold to us as a concept, you know, even the idea of happily ever after, right? Like, you know, the fairy tale happens, the two people end up together and they're happily ever after.
Yeah.
But what does that even look like?
Right.
You know, there's no explanation. There's no deeper dive into it in popular culture. It's like an endpoint. Like you reach happiness and then you're just happy forever.
Sure.
And that's obviously not how life is.
No.
And I think accepting that is something that's really been important for me in creating stability in my life and in realizing how like dysregulated I can become in those situations where I feel like I'm unhappy. Like, well, how do I fix it now?
Yeah.
And being able to like sit with it. I think my own music writing is part of that practice for me, where I like to write sad songs. I like to write songs about the hard times in my life, and you know, it doesn't like fix them or take them away or, you know, but it changes my relationship to them.
Yeah.
And it gives me something that's like a positive thing in my life that comes out of the experience of unhappiness and sadness.
Yeah. It's that, that concept of the alchemist, right?
Yeah.
Like taking the lead and turning it into gold.
I just finished reading that book yesterday.
Did you really?
First time in my life.
Ha! That's a great one, right?
It's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of the, you know, like you're listening to it and you're like, oh yeah, my own personal legend. Oh yeah. Like, you know, follow your heart, just listen to your heart. And it's interesting how I can imagine a teen reading that or somebody in their
20s. That's right.
And them just being like, all right, this is what I think is going to bring me happiness. I'm going to listen to my heart and go.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, listening to this book and experiencing it through the lens of being 42. And it's a very different experience than I can imagine I would have had if I had read it when I was 16 or when I was 25.
Yeah. I think that's one of the most aggravating and also most satisfying aspects of life is that patience that we have to have for things to hit us the right way or to hit us in the different way, right? I mean, who's to say what the right way was? But you're right. Like, I think I read that book in my 20s, and I totally connect with what you're talking about, that impression of the message. And I have a similar experience that I think of often and probably mention often because I'm one of those people who repeats things.
Me too.
But I, in the last couple years, I sort of decided to dive into Joseph Campbell a little bit and listen to a lot of his lectures and watch some and read some of his books, and had a moment where he was, I'm pretty sure he's the one who coined the phrase "follow your bliss." Hmm. With his students would ask him, you know, what should I do in my life? You know, how should I, after I graduate, what should I do with myself? And he would say, "Follow your bliss." And this, my introduction to that phrase was like seeing it, you know, in a beach rental house, piece of driftwood or something, you know, and I would roll my eyes and just, you know, even kind of get a little bit aggravated about it. Like, yeah, everybody just do what makes you happy, you know, like just that's all we need, you know, listening to him talk about it totally shifted my understanding of it. And it's really become, I've unapologetically used it as a guide for myself. And the idea isn't, you know, I realize the idea isn't just, bliss isn't just happiness, or at least to me, I'm kind of creating my own definition as I go, which I think I do with most things. Mm-hmm. But to me, bliss is that combination of struggle and reward. You know, you don't have bliss when riches are just fed to you, and you're, and you know, entertainment is like thrown at you and everything like that. That's not bliss. It's a, it can be, it can make you laugh, it can be fun at times, it can, you know, whatever, but that special feeling of bliss seems to be a culmination of, like, I don't know, climbing up a mountain and getting to the top, and your legs are tired and you're sweaty and you're nasty, and but you brought a backpack and it's got like a cold drink in there and a snack, mm-hmm. and you're sitting up there and the wind's blowing and you accomplish something, you know, that's the bliss. It was hard and then it was fun, or it was hard and it was peaceful, mm-hmm. or and that ebb and flow to me is magic. And I do think that there is, with the alchemist, that follow your heart part, I think I recognize that idea that, yeah, if you go in the direction of the things that make you buzz, that make you just light up, mm-hmm. it is a good compass. You can't be blind to, you know, folly, I guess, but it's a good compass just for meeting the kind of people that align with you, or that celebrate what you celebrate. It's a good compass to direct yourself towards the kind of expression you want to make. And I never would have met you if I didn't follow my bliss with music, you yeah. know, 20 years ago when I decided in college, like, I'm going to put some effort into this.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. It sounds like I'm forming a theory in my head right now that it's like the act of creation. Right, like when you get to the mountaintop, you took action, you put in work, you created that moment for yourself. And if you had just taken, you know, somebody had driven you to the mountaintop and you got out with your cold drink, it wouldn't have the same effect. It's like, you know, Shannon and I have done some like backwoods multi-overnight hiking trips, and there's no better hamburger than the one you get when you come off the trail.
Yes.
And, you know, that... And you create that experience not because it's a good hamburger, but because of everything that led you to that point, and right. like the work you put in to being that tired and that dirty and that, you know, just physically exhausted, that, you know, you're tasting this food in a new way because you've never been in that condition physically or mentally right. when you've had a hamburger before.
Right.
And it's the same with music. Right. It's, you know, I can sit down with a chord chart and learn somebody's song and it feels good and I like that song. But when I write a song, it's taken my whole life to get me to the point where I'm ready to write that song, and I get to experience it all by myself for the very first time. And that like moment of creation and then experiencing what the outcome of the creation is, I think it feels like that blissy concept you're talking about.
Definitely. I think your theory is sound. I'm totally with you on that. Do you feel your songs carry so much emotion in them? It's
true. Jacob's songs carry an enormous amount of emotion, and there's a reason, and you can hear the reason from Jacob himself in part two of my conversation in the next episode. Jacob and I delve into some songwriting practices, our emotional attachment to the songs we write, and to my delight, we get to dig into some of the selections from Hurts, which is the new EP from Jacob's current musical project, Them. I had the opportunity to participate in the recording of that EP. I'm very proud of it. Jacob's very proud of it, as he should be. It's a beautiful set of songs recorded by a beautiful set of people, a beautiful combination of musicians who created a sound unique to only this combination of people. Jacob goes into further detail on that point as well. So don't wait. Hop on over to the next episode so you can hear part two of my conversation with Jacob Adams. And you get the added bonus of being able to hear some of the selections from Hurts, which you can find streaming on all major platforms. Search for Them, THYMN, and you'll find it, and you'll get to listen. Also, if you're old school and you'd like to listen to the album on a cassette tape, Jacob handcrafted a small batch of cassette tapes. You can purchase one of these by contacting Jacob. There are many ways to contact him. One is through Instagram on his handle, ThymMusic, T-H-Y-M-N Music, all one word, if you would like to get a special handcrafted cassette tape version of Hertz. So hop on over to the next episode for part two of my conversation with Jacob Adams. And in the meantime, please accept my gratitude and thanks for finding your way here today. I hope this episode finds you well.